You're very handsome.
You're very pretty.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No.
Yes.
No.
We are starting chapter 21 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Do you think I'm wearing lipstick or not?
I can't tell. I'm going to go with no.
You're right.
They look a little bit lipsticky, though, don't they?
Because I ate really spicy things.
Oh, what'd you have?
My salad.
Oh, your Chipotle. I see. Very good. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this chapter is called The House Elf Liberation Front.
That spells health.
It does. Or thelf, if you include the.
Okay.
Harry, Ron, and Hermione. It's always Harry, Ron, and Hermione. She never goes Hermione, Ron, and Harry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read it. Hermione, Ron, and Harry.
No, I don't want you to.
But I like Hermione best.
You have to do the real things.
Okay. Harry, Ron, and Hermione went up to the owlery. Owlery. That evening to find Pigwidgeon. So that Harry could send Sirius a letter telling him that he had managed to get past his dragon unscathed. On the way, Harry filled Ron in on everything Sirius had told him about Karkaroff. Though shocked at first to hear that Karkaroff had been a Death Eater, by the time they entered the Owlery, Ron was saying that they ought to have suspected it all along. "Fits, doesn't it?" he said. "Remember what Malfoy said on the train, with his dad being friends with Karkaroff? Now we know where they knew each other. They were probably running around in masks together at the World Cup. I'll tell you one thing, though, Harry. If it was Karkaroff who put your name in the goblet, though, he's going to be feeling really stupid now, isn't he? Didn't work, it did it. You've only got a scratch. Come here, I'll do it." Pigwidgeon was so excited at the idea of a delivery that he was flying around and around Harry's head, hooting incessantly. Ron snatched Pigwidgeon out of the air and held him still while Harry attached his letter.
I like that image.
Yeah. While Harry attached the letter to his leg. "There's no way of any of the other tasks are going to be as dangerous. How could they be?" Ron went on as he carried Pigwidgeon to the window. "You know what? I reckon you could win this tournament, Harry. I'm serious." Harry knew that Ron was only saying this to make up for his behavior of the last few weeks.
Romance!
But he appreciated it all the same. Hermione, however, leaned against the owlery wall, folded her arms, and frowned at Ron. "Harry's got a long way to go before he finishes this tournament," she said seriously. "If that was the first task, I hate to think what's coming next." "Right little ray of sunshine, aren't you?" said Ron. "You and Professor Trelawney should get together sometime."
Lutus.
He threw Pigwidgeon out the window. Pigwidgeon plummeted 12 feet before he managed to pull himself back up again. The letter attached to his leg was much longer and heavier than usual. Harry hadn't been able to resist giving Sirius a blow-by-blow account of how exactly he had swerved, circled, and dodged the horntail. It's, like, so boring.
Well, he's bragging about his exploits, and he doesn't have a mom or dad to be like, "Guess what I did at school today, Mom?"
That's true. They watched Pigwidgeon disappear into the darkness. And then Ron said, "Well, we better get downstairs for your surprise party, Harry. Fred and George should have nicked enough food from the kitchens by now." Sure enough, when they entered the Gryffindor common room, it exploded with cheers and yells again. There were mountains of cakes and flagons of pumpkin juice and butterbeer on every surface. Lee Jordan had let off filibuster's fireworks so that the air was thick with stars and smoke. Dean Thomas, who was very good at drawing, had put up some impressive new banners, most of which depicted Harry zooming around the Horntail's head on his firebolt, though a couple showed Cedric with his head on fire. Harry helped himself to food. He had almost forgotten what it was like to feel properly hungry, and sat down with Ron and Hermione. He couldn't believe how happy he felt. He had Ron back at his side, he'd gotten through the first task, and he wouldn't have to face the second one for 3 months. So he's going to slack off for 3 months. God, he's such a bad wizard. "Blimey, this is heavy," said Lee Jordan, picking up the golden egg, which Harry had left on a table, and weighing it in his hands. "Open it, Harry. Go on. See what's inside." "He's supposed to work out the clue on his own," Hermione said swiftly. "It's in the tournament rules." And I was supposed to work out how to get past the dragon on my own, too, Harry muttered. So only Hermione could hear him, and she grinned rather guiltily. Yeah, go on, Harry, open it, several people echoed. Lee passed Harry the egg, and Harry dug his fingernails into the groove. How had he not, tried that before?
What do you mean, the egg?
Yeah, why did he wait for, like...
He was just happy that he got alive. Like, he got out alive, and he wasn't thinking about it, because he's like, it's 3 months away.
That would be the first thing I did.
He summoning spells until the fucking night before, Jesse. Do you learn anything from these stories?
Harry, he's not a good role model to little children. Harry dug his fingernails into the groove that ran all the way around it and prized it open. It was hollow and completely empty, but the moment Harry opened it, the most horrible noise, a loud and screeching wailing, filled the room. The nearest thing to it Harry had ever heard was the ghost orchestra at Nearly Headless Nick's Death Day party, who had all been playing the musical Saw. "Shut it!" bellowed Fred, his hands over his ears. "What was that?" said Seamus Finnegan, staring at the egg as Harry slammed it shut. "Sounded like a banshee. Maybe you got to get past one of those, Harry." "Was someone being tortured?" said Neville, who had gone very white and spilled sausage rolls all over the floor. "You're going to have to fight the Cruciatus Curse." "Don't be a prat, Neville. That's illegal," said George. "They wouldn't use the Cruciatus Curse on the champions. I thought it sounded a bit like Percy singing." "Maybe you've got to attack him while he's in the shower, Harry." "Want a jam tort, Hermione?" said Fred. Hermione looked doubtfully at the plate he was offering her. Fred grinned. "It's all right," he said. "I haven't done anything to them. It's the custard creams you've got to watch." Neville, who had just bitten into a custard cream, choked and spat it out. Fred laughed. "Just my little joke, Neville." Hermione took a jam tart, and then she said, "Did you get all this food from the kitchens, Fred?" "Yep," grinned Fred. He put on a high-pitched squeak and imitated a house elf. "Anything we can get you, sir? Anything at all?" "They're dead helpful. Get me a roast ox if I was peckish." "How do you get in there?" Hermione said in an innocent sort of voice. "Easy," said Fred, "concealing door with a painting of a bowl of fruit. Just tickle the pear and it giggles and..." He stopped and looked suspiciously at her. "Why?" "Nothing," said Hermione quickly. "Gonna try to lead the house elves on strike now, are you?" said George. "Gonna give up the leaflet stuff and try to stir them into rebellion?" Several people chortled. Hermione didn't answer. "Don't you go upsetting them, telling them they've got to take clothing and salaries," said Fred warningly. "You'll put them off their cooking." Just then, Neville caused a slight diversion by turning into a large canary. "Oh, what? Sorry, Neville," Fred shouted over the laughter. "I forgot, it was the custard creams we hexed." You know, the fact that you can make custard cream, turn someone into a canary, and they have a hard time turning, like, themselves, you know, transfiguring themselves into things. It's, I don't know, anyways. Within a minute, however, Neville molted, and once his feathers had fallen off, he reappeared looking entirely normal. He even joined in laughing. "Canary creams," Fred shouted to the excitable crowd. "George and I invented them. 7 sickles each. A bargain." It was nearly 1 a.m. They're good.
I know.
I would be friends with them.
Dude, me too.
It was nearly 1 a.m. when Harry finally went up to the dormitory with Ron, Neville, Seamus, and Dean. Before he pulled the curtains of his four-poster shut, Harry set his tiny model of the Hungarian horntail on the table next to his bed, where it yawned, curled up, and closed his eyes.
Aww, cute!
Really, Harry thought as he pulled the hangings of his four-poster clothes. Hagrid had a point. They were all right, really, dragons. Should we stop there?
No.
Okay, princess. Should we continue?
Yes. You're really nice to look at. I'm not going to let you.
Ditto. Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. I love you so much, Care. The start...
I like your hair that, like, sorry.
Really? But I kind of want a haircut.
I know, we'll get you a haircut. I'm just saying that right now you look very handsome and dashing, like a dashing programmer.
Thanks. The start of December brought wind and sleet to Hogwarts. Drafty through the castle. Oh, drafty though the castle always was in winter, Harry was glad of its fires and thick walls every time he passed the Durmstrang ship on the lake, which was pitching in high winds.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, why didn't they come and stay in some spare rooms?
I know.
It's black sails. Remember? What?
In Narnia, when he's like, the land of spare
Yeah. It's black sails billowing against the dark skies. Harry thought the Beauxbatons caravan was likely to be pretty chilly, too. Hagrid, he noticed, was keeping Madame Maxime's horses, well provided with their preferred drink of single malt whiskey. The fumes wafting from the trough in the corner of the paddock was enough to make the entire Care of Magical Creatures class lightheaded. This was unhelpful, as they were still tending the horrible scroots and needed their wits about them. I'm not sure whether they hibernate or not, Hagrid told the shivering class in the windy pumpkin patch next lesson. Thought we'd just try to see if they fancied a kip. We'll just settle them down in the box. There were only 10 scroots left now. Apparently, their desire to kill one another had not been exercised enough out of them. Each of them was now approaching 6 feet in length. They had thick gray armor, their powerful scuttling legs, their fire-blasting ends, their stings and their suckers, combined to make the scroots the most repulsive things Harry had ever seen. The class looked dispiritedly at the enormous boxes Hagrid had brought out, all lined with pillows and fluffy blankets.
I love Hagrid.
I know.
He's so cute.
We'll just lead him in here, Hagrid said, and put the lids on, see what happens. But the scroots, it transpired, did not hibernate, and did not appreciate being forced into pillow-lined boxes and nailed in. Hagrid was soon yelling, "Don't panic now, don't panic," while the scroots rampaged around the pumpkin patch, now strewn with the smoldering wreckage of the boxes. Most of the class, Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle in the lead, had fled into Hagrid's cabin through the back door and barricaded themselves in. Harry, Ron, and Hermione, however, were among those who remained outside trying to help Hagrid. Together, they managed to restrain and tie up 9 of the scroots, though at the cost of numerous burns and cuts, finally, only 1 scroot was left. "Don't frighten him now," Hagrid shouted at Ron and Harry, as Ron and Harry used their wands to shoot jets of fiery sparks at the scroot, which was advancing menacingly on them, its sting arched, quivering over its back. "Just try and slip the rope around his sting, and you won't hurt any of the others." "Yeah, we wouldn't want that," Ron shouted angrily, as he and Harry backed into the wall of Hagrid's cabin, still holding the scroots off with their spark. "Well, well, well, this does look like fern." Rita Skeeter was leaning on Hagrid's garden fence, looking in at the mayhem. She was wearing a thick magenta coat with a furry purple collar today, and her crocodile-skin handbag was over her arm. Hagrid launched himself forward at the top of the scroot that was cornering Harry and Ron and flattened it. A blast of fire shot out of its end, withering the pumpkin plants nearby. "Who are you?" Hagrid asked Rita Skeeter, as he slipped a loop of rope around the scroot's sting and tightened it. "Rita Skeeter, Daily Prophet reporter," Rita replied, beaming at him. Her gold teeth glinted. "Thought Dumbledore said you weren't allowed inside the school anymore," said Hagrid, frowning slightly as he got off the slightly squashed scroot and started tucking it over to its fellows. Rita acted as though she hadn't heard what Hagrid had said. "What are these fascinating creatures called?" she asked, beaming more widely. "Blast-ended scroots," grunted Hagrid. "Really?" said Rita, with apparently full of lively interest. "I've never heard of them before. Where do they come from?" Harry noticed a dull red flush rising out of Hagrid's wild black beard, and his heart sank. Where had Hagrid gotten the scroots from? Hermione, who seemed to be thinking along these lines, said very quickly, "They're very interesting, aren't they? Aren't they, Harry?" Oh, yes. Interesting, said Harry as she stepped on his foot. Ah, you're here, Harry, said Rita Skeeter, looking around. So you like Care of Magical Creatures, do you? One of your favorite lessons? Yes, said Harry stoutly. Hagrid beamed at him. Lovely, said Rita really lovely. Been teaching long? She added, asked to Hagrid. Harry noticed her eyes travel over Dean, who had a nasty cut across one cheek. Lavender, whose robes were badly singed. Seamus, who was nursing several burnt fingers. And then to the cabin windows where most of the class stood, their noses pressed against the glass, waiting to see if the coast was clear. This is only my second year, said Hagrid. Lovely. I don't suppose you'd like to give an interview, would you? Share some of your experience with magical creatures? The Prophet does a zoological column every Wednesday. I'm sure you know. We could feature these bang-ended scoots. Blast-ended scroots, Hagrid said eagerly. Yeah, why not?
You're supposed to do the Scottish voice for me.
I can't do two different accents in the same... It's hard to... The only way I can do these accents is if I do them enough. You know? But I'll try. Like, okay, so what's... Blast-ended scroots, Hagrid said eagerly. Yeah, why not?
Sounds great. Yeah. Sounds great.
Why not? Harry had a very bad feeling about this. But there was no way of communicating it to Hagrid without Rita Skeeter seeing, so he had to stand and watch in silence as Hagrid and Rita Skeeter made arrangements to meet in the Three Broomsticks for a good long interview later that week. Then the bell rang up at the castle, signaling the end of the lesson. Well, goodbye, Harry, said Rita Skeeter merrily to him as he set off with Ron and Hermione. Till Friday night, Hagrid. She'll twist everything he says, Harry said under his breath. Just as long as he didn't import those scroots illegally or anything, said Hermione desperately. They looked at one another. It was exactly the sort of thing Hagrid might do. Hagrid's been in loads of trouble before. Dumbledore's never sacked him, said Ron consolingly. Worst that'll happen is Hagrid will have to get rid of the scroots. Sorry, did I say worst? I meant best. Harry and Hermione laughed, feeling slightly more cheerful, and they went off to lunch. Should we stop? Okay. We'll stop there, boo. You ready to take a nap? You're so cute, kitten. I love you so much, kitty. Yeah. You're very adorable. I love you, kitty. Sleep well, boo. Good night.